Hello.
I'm here finally
Yay.
with a mind your own uterus shirt on and everything.
It's fantastic. It's perfect, honestly.
Oh,
Why
it's
is it that there's not a like tab thingy to open this tiny bottle of champagne? I've been sitting here for like a solid minute just trying to peel this foil off.
Did you get this, the one I got last week? The little one?
Well, it's the same like those little ones, but it's a different brand. La Bella.
Ooh, you know that means beautiful. It means the beautiful.
The beautiful. I got it. Oh my gosh. This was,
Congratulations.
oh, I was like, I can't participate in the drink. I can't open the damn
I'm
champagne.
sure you would not be able to drink anything if you could
No.
get that Prosecco bottle open.
Because surely there's nothing else in this house that I
I
could
was
open.
gonna say, I re vaguely remember a giant shelf of things.
My mom said, "Your house looks like an alcohol liquor store." And I said, "Thank you."
Well, at least they're not empty. I feel like I would be more concerned if you just had empty bottles, like all the time.
Isn't that how we decorated when we were in college, though?
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did.
Put all your empties on top of the shelves. It's decoration.
My friend Ellie was the first person to do this, but she drank wine. She was very advanced for her young
That's
age.
very advanced. We didn't drink wine really well. We pretended, but
Yeah, but she just would have wine bottles all around her room. And this was in the early 2000s. And so, like, when an evangelical wandered in, which you know there's one of them, two of them around, it always caused quite the stir. Because they were like, she's drinking wine.
she's
And
drinking wine.
it's like, Jesus drank wine.
Dear God, how could
I know.
she?
It was terrible.
How could she?
Speaking of, we are celebrating
We are.
my queen, Christy's friend, Taylor Swift.
Congrats to Taylor and her. We were all nervous, that it wouldn't do well, this
Right.
album.
We were worried for her 'cause
We were like,
she's had some flops. I don't remember the names of them, but
yeah, and she's really still trying to build that fan base of hers.
I know. You know what? I sometimes worry. Her and Beyonce, I'm just concerned that.
Yeah, I mean, oh, it's a tough go, but she did it. She did
Yeah, she did. She did.
it
And I haven't even listened to the whole thing. Christy's listened to more of it
I've
than
listened to mo
what I
most of
have.
it, I would say most of it, but in snippets here and there. Leah did stay up and listen to some of it at midnight.
I did.
Yeah.
I did, except I realized, I told Christy this, I realized, you know, Taylor Swift's albums, sometimes they're like shaking it off, and then sometimes they're like, I was a cardigan underneath your bed and listen to my thoughts. And I realized very quickly that drinking the copious amounts of wine that I did, that I needed a Shake It Off album.
Yeah,
And this one was
was not what this
a
was.
cardigan under the
This was
bed. And I was
cardigan.
like,
Yeah.
my friend down the street was texting me like, oh my gosh, Joe is done for. And I remember I didn't know what was she was talking about. And I was like, okay, so I'm gonna have. And it wasn't even that much. I mean, I had, you know, it was, I had just started the wine, but oh, I think I needed no wine. I
Yeah,
think I
well,
needed to
and
be in my right mind.
maybe like 2 p.m. instead of midnight.
It was also midnight. Yeah. I was not well rested and I had wine in my system. So it's like if you can't operate a car in a complex way, you probably shouldn't listen to
Probably
this
shouldn't listen to
album
this album for the first time. Yeah.
for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Christy loves Florida. There's a song called Florida. Florida!
Was like,
Exclamation
wait, what?
point.
Oh, yeah. Florida with 3 exclamation points is my favorite, and I'm upset about it.
She's upset. Because it's her favorite state in the union. She loves Florida. So does Taylor Swift. She makes, I do remember the line, I think I texted you, that was like, I wish that she had a timeshare in Destin. And I was like, Taylor Swift has never been to Destin.
Dustin,
It's like the Redneck Riviera. I
right?
was like, she has
Crack me up.
Googled.
I
She
saw
Googled Florida, and that's what came up.
I saw a social media post that was like, my main concern about this album is that Taylor Swift is making Destin seem like a popular tourist spot.
It's not. I mean, well, it is, but it is for like Southern people. It's not like a Taylor Swift. Although I do remember her singing, I used to sit in Centennial Park, which that's a line from, I think, Folklore, Invisible String. And she, y'all can correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, I used to sit in Centennial Park. Centennial Park's the big park in the middle of Atlanta. She was not sitting in Centennial Park. If she was sitting in Centennial Park, she was wearing a mask.
she was in the best disguise she's ever been in.
And also, you don't really sit in Centennial Park. It's like got like the Coke Museum and the everything around it.
Is it not like
it's not like
it's Central not like Central Park. Park.
No, it's a little square that is surrounded by various museums. It's where we put the tourists. It's where we keep you guys there so that you don't bother us elsewhere. Don't
go to the other places.
Yeah. So you can go and drink Coke from Bolivia if you want to or whatever. Go see the whale shark that shouldn't be in that freaking aquarium. But anyway, that's where we put y'all. Yeah. That's where you sit. So if she was... She either had the worst tour guide of all time that was just like, go sit there. And then also everyone went blind because it's so busy.
You know what I feel like? Maybe this is my new, I just came up with this. This is my new conspiracy theory, is that Taylor Swift puts locations into her songs that she hates. So that she drives people to go to those places so that her favorite places are less full. You know, like, like Destin, but she actually likes St. Pete.
Sorry, Lake District. You got a whole thing.
You know, like,
screw you.
This is my new conspiracy theory.
She really doesn't like London then, because London pops up all over the shop.
I mean, I can't disagree with her.
Oh, no. Sorry, New York City. New York. I mean, oh, gosh.
Look, it's just. I'm not sure
that I can go with this theory.
I'm going with it. This is my adopted conspiracy theory that I have just come up with on this spot. You heard it here on Theology on the Rocks. This is my conspiracy theory.
I feel like she just looks at names of places and sees what rhymes. Like, she has a giant map of things, and then she's if this one rhymes.
Yeah. You might be right, but mine is more fun.
Yeah. I think mine's more. Yours is more fun. I love that she would have visited Destin though.
Destin once and was like, "Nope." Like,
she saw the Confederate flag bikinis and was like, "I am out.
I do not want to be here."
And then all of a sudden, she got a timeshare. Maybe so.
Maybe.
And then she went to Atlanta, and someone was really mad at her, and they sent her to Centennial Park.
You know,
she just sat there and watched people go in the Coke Museum. Rude. Whoever the friend is.
Oh, rude. So funny. I have these images of her being like, I hate this place. Writing a song about it.
She like,
oh my gosh.
Oh, she says she used to read there. No way. No one does that. And even if she wasn't Taylor Swift, if you were reading in Centennial Park, someone would make a comment. Like, why are you reading?
What are you doing?
Go play in the fountain. Don't read. Silly. Someone's going to message and be like, Centennial Park is great. Now everyone reads
there. Everyone reads
there. Guys, it's been a while since I lived in Atlanta, but it wasn't a reading place when I was there.
As a person who has read in a park that is not a reading park, I am here to tell you that it doesn't matter how not famous you are. If you are reading in a park where people don't read, you get a lot of stares and comments.
Did you get cake thrown at you? What park was it?
Garden of the Gods. It's in Colorado Springs, and it's like a hiking park. Like, you go there to be active. But I would go there. And I would find a rock and I would just sit down and read.
On the rock?
On the rock.
That feels comfy.
You know, there are some flat ones, like big rocks, big flat rocks. And
I feel like this is how you know you're from Colorado.
People would be hiking.
Look, we don't have grass.
We don't have grass. Have rocks. What are you? I mean, they're going to sit on this flat rock, or I'm going to sit in dirt. That is, there is no grass. Also, if there was grass, a rattlesnake was definitely in it. So,
ew. I don't want to live there. Sorry, Colorado. I know half of our listeners are Colorado.
But like, I would go sit and I would be reading, and people would be like hiking, like really hiking and walking past me, and they would just like look down with the most judgment that they could possibly muster, which is a lot.
I like that you said really hiking.
Like not like just a like casual stroll. Casually hiking. It's like Right. They're all like outfitted for it, you know.
Hikers are judgy.
They are judgy people.
Like when I went to on my trip, the trip that shall not be spoken of, everyone was, or not everyone, but a few people were like, "We're gonna hike. You want to go?" And I was like, No. And then they were like, "What?"
When we went to Dollywood, one of my friends said, like, "Oh, you know, we'll be in the Smoky Mountains. We can go for a hike." And I was like, "I'm not gonna do that." And she was like, "Do you think any of your friends will go hike with me?" And I was like, "No, I don't."
I mean, like, I would if you were like real sad about it, but like I'm not gonna like volunteer.
And my one friend was like, "Leah, do you want to leave the rest of the group and go hike with me?" You
depends on which friend it was and if she had alcohol. In which case, firm maybe. But otherwise, I don't know.
Okay, have you tasted this drink yet?
I'm not, but do we want to taste it or talk about it first?
Oh yeah, let's talk about it first. Okay, so since
I just put it in my mouth.
Since we decided we were going to celebrate this album, I also found a bunch of people on the social medias, the variety of them, that were, like posting different cocktails that you could drink while you listened to the album. And so we went through a few, and this one is called "But Daddy, I Love Him."
Yeah. Drama. And the girl wrapped roses and put it in there, which feels like it would be difficult to drink, but
well, I'm gonna put it on the TikTok so you can all see this, but it's so it's supposed to be rose liqueur and gin and champagne.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to go buy rose liqueur, so I'm using elderflower liqueur.
As am I. I think I thought that was what.
Well, I was like, we have elderflower, so let's just use that.
Yeah. And my crappy ass gin that I still have, guys.
I didn't want
a bottle of gin that never goes away.
Of gin. I just felt like we don't need multiple floral liqueurs in our houses.
No.
So it's a slight variation, but it's all right.
Let's do it
here. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really taste of much.
It's a little bit mine's a little bit sweeter than I would have expected, but that might be,
I think that's probably the Prosecco.
Might be the Prosecco.
I have a dry Prosecco, so mine tastes like not a lot.
I don't know what this is.
But I will say this could be like a danger drink.
It could be a danger drink. I do feel like it's gonna be like a drink where I get drunk really quickly because it's three different alcohols.
It is, but it can't beat that time that we had all alcohol.
All of the alcohol.
What was the drink?
I can't even remember. I just remember we were like, what is happening to us?
The mixer was the booze. The booze was the booze.
It was just booze. Booze, booze, booze.
Right. I mean, I like it. I mean,
it's growing on me. The more I sip it, the more it's growing on me.
I don't know that I would make it for myself, but I also am not a gin person, really. So
that's because you drink crappy gin.
I don't think it is at all.
Someday, listeners, I'm gonna
I've had good gin. Where Stuart's from, Gordon, it's called Gordon, like, Mansion or something. Anyway, they make their own gin, and it's, like, really rare and very good. And I got a bottle of it, and we drank it. It's seaweed infused or something.
Oh, I don't know. That's...
I could be making that
That's
up.
Weird.
Okay. It feels right.
It feels right. I'm going to ask Stuart about it later.
You should. You know how, like, you say things and, like, it's not like you're trying to flex or anything. Like, you just feel like it's in your brain.
Yeah.
And then you think about it and you're like, maybe it's not.
This happens pretty regularly to me. I'll be, like, on a roll, but then you can't stop.
No.
You can't be like, wait, maybe this isn't real. You just have to, like, double down. And people are like, are you
it
sure?
It has seaweed in it.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely sure about this.
That's called being a teacher, guys. Welcome to that life. So I had good gin, and it was good, but it still tasted like infused water. So that's fine. But it was nice for summer.
Yes.
Except we were in Scotland.
Well, so Scotland is where I discovered my love for gin, because prior to Scotland, I didn't like it. And it was primarily because Scotland had good gin, but also because they would do it with, like, different types of tonics. So they'd be like, oh, with this gin, you should use, you know, elderflower tonic or blood orange tonic or whatever. Like, they were always like, we have to make it correctly. And this is why I'm kind of snobby about gin. So now it's like, no, you need to do it correctly, or I don't want anything to do with it.
Those gin snobs out there, guys.
The gin snobs. We're few, but we're very annoying.
Few but mighty, and all in Scotland, for the most part. Yeah, I don't think Scotland gets the credit for that, because I learned it was either vodka or gin, but because the whiskey, the beginnings of the clear liquors, at least coming out of Scotland, was that you have to age the whiskey for so long.
Yeah.
I learned that on a tour.
For 3 days or 3 years and 1 day.
Well, and yet, but you can make this other stuff
you
quicker.
Can make gin faster. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that they would produce, like, the stuff while they just sat and waited on the whiskey. Which, you know, makes sense, because what you like do the whiskey, they're like, well, I'm glad we can make money in like
in 3 years in 1 day.
Yeah. Or even the big, like, even the ones that Stuart gets are like 10
or longer. Yeah,
like usually, and it's like 10, you made that, and the person may have retired by the time.
Or die.
Or die before anyone even drinks it. Yeah, that's what I would be like. I would be like walking out the door being like, well, hope it works out for y'all. Goodbye. And that's how my retirement's going to go. I was talking to my mom, and she was just like talking about retirement, and she's a nurse, and she's not going to retire, I don't think, for a while. And I was like, when I hit that, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. I hit that number. Goodbye.
I know. Like, the moment I can retire. Which probably will be never, but.
That's true. We are teachers, and it's not looking good so far.
Yeah, my retirement fund is not plentiful, so.
We're drinking my retirement fund. Luckily, I married rich, which I didn't really, I didn't marry.
You have rich. A higher chance than I do, but.
I married a man who got a degree in computers, which is what. We probably should have talked. But you know what? We're so cool. Look at us.
I know.
We're killing it.
Our jobs are amazing. Speaking of, we
you said it so fast. She's actually being held hostage by her students right now. You don't know that, but
you don't know it, but they're all staring at now.
Ugh. It's very strange. Very
people
strange.
Are grading, looming, like
that sounds great. It's because you well. Anyway, I won't say that.
It's you know, it's the end of the semester, so like everything is becoming due and is due, and I spaced stuff out, which I did so that it wouldn't just be everything all at once, you know, which is smart. Mm-hmm. But simultaneously, it means for the next 3 weeks, every week has a lot of grading.
Plus, you teach 800 classes.
I do teach too many classes. Yeah, it's a lot. And there's a lot of students in them.
Which I forgot how cozy a gig teaching grad students is. It's a pretty cozy gig. Because
yeah.
I'm just like, read this book. I'm not going to teach you about it.
Just read it.
Go read it. You need it.
Read it and report back to me.
Tell me exactly. You got 7 pages. Tell me what you think.
One time.
Also, I wrote the book, so be very careful.
I will say, one time I had a student employee. He was doing a work study kind of thing, or had a like scholarship internship or something, and he was assigned to me. And I didn't have really anything. Like, they were like, it needs to be like the work he does needs to be educational, not just like paperwork or like whatever. And I was like, okay. But I taught almost exclusively gen ed stuff, and I already had a TA, and I was just like, I don't know what to do. So I just made him read and take notes on the books that I was using for my PhD.
Good.
I was like, read this book and take notes. Give me the notes. And he would be like, I don't understand this book. I would be like, just tell me if you find stuff that's important.
He doesn't understand it. And you're like, okay, well, find the important things, though. Christy, I don't know what is important. I don't understand it.
He was very smart, and he did a good job. It was
good for him.
It was not like...
I mean, it probably was a good use of time.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean it, what else were you going to do, you know?
I can think of a lot of things. Depending on, I mean, the level, but grading mostly. Or the well was your GGA.
My TA was doing the grading.
Oh.
So, like, I couldn't.
Dang, you had, like, an entourage.
I had an entourage. I used to be so much cooler than I am now, but.
Don't say too much. Those students who are staring at you have sticks.
They're staring. They have sticks. They're ready to throw the rocks. My mom keeps being like, can you get a TA? And I'm like, no.
Yeah, great.
Anyway.
We had student workers at Pfeiffer. You could, at my previous institution. Yeah. You could get them.
Well, like this.
I never had anything for them to do, really.
This isn't my previous institution also. You just have to have more than like gen eds, you know. There's just nowhere for me to go pull those students from. So
it's true.
But it's true. It's fine.
Teacher life, guys.
Teacher life.
If it sounds luxurious, you're right.
If you have ever felt like, you know, professors must just be living these glamorous lives of intellectual study, it's a lot of grading.
So much grading. And even when I was at Edinburgh and like I only taught 2 classes a semester, because I had PhD students and master students. So it's so much reading.
Do you have to read all their stuff?
Yeah. Yep. Like all the time.
And then you have to read enough stuff to be able to tell them like you need to read this other thing.
Yep. And I was typically getting students that were sort of the, because I did practical theology, which is like this, I don't know if you guys know, but it's like.
Wait, I'm sorry. You did what? What did?
I did the Lord's work. Which actually I did do the Lord's work, but I also did everything else that fell underneath that world.
Yeah.
So anyone doing like qualitative research or anyone doing, you know, sex stuff in general, because no one wanted to do that. And so there was some things that I'd like, someone would put me on as like a second or something, because that was another thing, you had to have a first and a second supervisor, and that was a difficult juggling act. And I would I'd have to read a bunch to get to where, but I think when you get to the PhD, honestly, and I mean I've told you this but you already knew it and other people too, it mostly just needs, you want your examiners to read it and be bored. Like, you want it to read like every other dissertation, and for them to not have to stop and think about anything.
Yeah.
But Well, you like, content-wise, is good. It's good to have good content. You need to have that in a strong argument. But, like, in general, it's the form, I think, that really...
Yeah. You want to make sure that it's very clear. You have to, like, do a lot of signposting, which, by the way, is a word I did not know until into my PhD. So signposting is where you just, like, keep referring back to things that you've already done to remind them, like...
Yeah. Yeah, like, don't make your examiners have to think too hard.
Yeah.
Because when they start thinking, they're like, oh, wait, why am I having to think this hard?
Well, and when they start thinking, too, then they start thinking about what they would have done instead.
Yes.
And you don't want
to avoid that. Yeah. It's like a giant court case where you want people to just ignore you.
Yeah.
And for you to be forgotten about. And that sounds so depressing, but it really is a lot of it. Also, I would say don't use, if you're going to use some name like Bart or Derrida or something like that, you better freaking know what you're talking
about. Oh, for sure.
Don't just like throw around like Socrates or
don't
something.
Be like, you know, Karl Barth said this and not know exactly that that's what's going on.
Because there's always going to be someone who's a scholar of that.
No, that's not what he said. That's you're absolutely wrong about this. Yeah.
No.
You don't
so either. And if someone says, why didn't you read this? You say...
You know what one of the best things about picking Jean Reese was? Is that so few people...
Nobody had read her. Yeah.
So they would just be like, this sounds fascinating. And I was like, uh-huh.
Well, that was what qualitative research, but in a different way, is that you can't really say, this person didn't tell me this. Because I'll be like, well, yes, they did.
Yeah.
In fact, it.
Yeah.
Yep. The conclusions I've constructed don't necessarily have to pan out the way I've presented it, but you can't challenge the source material, really.
Yeah. Well.
So. But today, guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we had a moment, a very interesting moment, where I've been reading Jesus and John Wayne by Lemet. I think is her name, Kristen
Demez.
Demez, yeah. There you go. And enjoying it very much. Highly recommend. But we are in the 90s now, and I was highlighting a bunch of stuff, which you'll be happy to know, listeners, that I finally was able to tell Christy about an evangelical thing that she didn't know about, and it was a first and probably a last.
I was like, what are you talking about?
So I started the combo just by saying, did you not have those guys that came to your school that tore phone books in half? And she was like, what?
I sure did not.
And I was like, I think they were evangelists, but I went to public school, so they weren't allowed to say anything. But they would also like bend metal pipes and like crack stuff with their head. But then it was all like the underlying thing was because Jesus basically there makes you able to do that. So
natural strength
to do a phone book. So these guys showed up in my the power team is what they were called. They showed up in the book that I was reading. And I was like, and there was another one called Extreme Ministries with an X.
With an X. Extreme.
Right.
It's so 90s. Early 2000s. So,
and the outfits. Did you see the outfits?
Yeah.
They were all in like biker shorts. It was crazy and extremely colorful outfits. So I remember them coming to my high school, which now looking back, I'm like, I don't know how they got away with that. But I guess it's because they just didn't mention Jesus. But I remember Jesus being a part of it. So clearly they did mention Jesus.
Yeah.
So anyway. Ringgold High School. You got a reckoning 40 years in the making coming. But so yeah, we started talking about the 90s and also the Wild at Heart. Is that the name of it? Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
Yep.
And some of the purity stuff, and so I'm deep into that time period right now, and it's interesting to reflect on. So we thought today we might talk a little bit about the patriarchy, but yeah. Also maybe specifically like, well, this would be my angle on it is it's a common thing when I get asked to speak that people will be like, do you want to talk about purity culture or the patriarchy? And I'll be like, okay. And I'm like, is this because I'm a woman? Like, is that why you want me to do this?
Yep.
And a theologian. But I think what I'm finding really interesting is during that 90s time period, how it worked and how gender roles became so, like, important in terms of being so definable as, like, male and female kind of thing. Because I will say, like, even though I didn't grow up in a hyper-evangelical culture, I definitely felt the sort of effects of that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And Christy even went to a church recently that was studying Wild at Heart.
Oh my gosh, I did.
Didn't you?
Which blows my mind that it was probably 3 years ago. And it was in Colorado, but it was, they were going through Wild at Heart as the like main sermon, not just like for a men's group or something. It was like the whole church had to listen to this nonsense. And the thing that kills me, like aside from my feelings about the book theologically, the book itself these days is also well known for being a book that I can't remember which one it is, but there's a specific drug cartel that uses it to indoctrinate the men.
What?
And to teach the specific hierarchy of the drug cartel. This is a documented researched thing.
Wow.
And so I'm going to look it up while I'm talking about this.
I mean, it's no phone book. Ripping a phone book in half information, but it's but it's pretty good info, Christy. I'll give you that.
Yes. Okay. So it.
She didn't listen to my joke.
Sorry. I was trying to find this.
It's okay. It's like talking to Stuart when he's on his phone. I make the most hilarious jokes, and he just looks out into the ether.
It's the cartel La Familia. Which is,
well, that's nice. That sounds nice. That's cartels go.
It is in, nope, I can't find where it is. But they use it to, it's in Mexico. Okay. So they use it to kind of discipline and organize the group, the cartel. And Eldridge, the writer of the book, has tried to be like, this is not what I meant the book to be, but I do feel strongly that if your book is, even if that's not, and I believe him that this is not what he intended, right? But if your book is being used in that way, maybe you need to have some self-reflection about why.
Right. That's right.
Like, what have I done wrong that my work could be used to do this? They're not taking it out of context. They're using the book. Like,
that's right. Like, what if wounded images?
What if somebody took wounded images?
Started a cult.
Started a cult. I would be like, so let's pull that from the shelves. I clearly need to do a rewrite or an apology or something. Like, you have to be able to.
Freaking sorry, guys.
Yeah, I'm so freaking sorry all over the place. Because if you're not willing to admit that perhaps your work has been done in a way that is harmful, then you aren't really trying to help or to talk about stuff, you know? And this is what your book is about, bad theology. Like, how are we doing theology poorly to promote?
What if people use my book as, like, inspiration to do more bad theology? They're like,
they would, she lays it out, guys. We know how to do bad theology now.
Right. She uses they just take the criteria for the bad and just are like, okay, this is our 10 commandments now, basically.
We're just going to really lean into being bad people. But, and it just, like I said, because I remember in evangelical spaces I had been in probably 10 years prior to this experience at the church, I was like very aware and it was very much part of discussion. And so I had just assumed that everyone had stopped using the book because they were like, oops, clearly this promotes some problematic things, so we'll stop. Nope, apparently not. I was giving them too much credit. So,
right. I mean, I had heard about it in the 90s, but I hadn't heard about it again until you brought
it up. Until I was like raging.
That's why I remember. Because it was a while ago. My brain, it was like yesterday.
I was very angry. I talked about it a lot. So. Yeah.
But see, I've not read the book, so I don't know what's actually in it. I just know what I've read in the descriptions of it by authors. So.
There was also one made for women that was a companion that I did.
Was it Naked at Heart?
Naked at Heart. No, I can't remember what it was called. But his I think his wife wrote it from her perspective or some, I don't know. Anyway.
Of course.
I read that one. Cause like I obviously Wild at Heart is for men. So I wouldn't have read it back in the day. So I read
you wouldn't understand it. It would look like hieroglyphics.
You know, it would just, it would fly right over my poor little head.
I would love if you just opened it and as you're trying to read it, it was just like a different language.
You're just like, what is this saying? None of these are it's in Wingdings, guys.
In Wingdings. Only men understand Wingdings.
But I do remember, and I remember almost nothing. I've very intentionally blocked out what I studied from that book, but it's a lot of that kind of like men are warriors and hunters, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to protect you, which also reminds me of the very recent, and I know I sent this to you, Leah, that conference where Mark Driscoll got mad because they had a sword swallower. He said that he looked like a stripper.
A stripper. And then it was like the gay agenda or something.
He was promoted and he kept calling him a Jezebel.
So amazing. But wasn't it like an evangelical conference?
It was, yeah, it was some kind of men's evangelical Christian conference. But the guy, well, so it's funny because the guy.
Why was he swallowing a sword?
Why does anyone ever swallow a sword, Leah?
What? It's a circus. Like, I can understand.
That's what he does. And he's been on America's Got Talent, I guess, a bunch of times. So they had him.
But what does that have to do with Jesus?
That's a solid question. However.
Is it like the phone book people, but reinstated?
Yes, it's exactly that. Like, let's perform this ridiculous act and then talk about how God is the one who let us perform that act. Mm. Like ripping phone books in half or swallowing swords. Except for, so this man, because he does it on America's Got Talent, he's got a whole performance. No one would have been shocked by this or shouldn't have been shocked by it. But part of his performance is to climb up a pole. And then he like pretends to fall down the pole while the sword is in his throat. And like almost hits the ground.
I mean, so he's pulled it.
So Driscoll's like, he's on a pole and he took his shirt off to do this. But you have to, because I don't know how informed you are about pole dancing. But part of the reason you have to do it with little clothes on is because your skin actually causes like enough friction to keep you where you want to be on the pole.
I was today years old. Christy, I'm not going to ask.
So like, even if
you're no pole dancing shame,
even if you're doing pole dancing just as like an exercise and a like exercise, right. You have to wear little clothes. You can't be fully cut because clothes are too slippery, essentially.
It looks so hard. And a side note, y'all that do the exercises.
Oh, it's
like, it looks so hard.
It looks, I can't even. I have never done it.
My arms aren't strong enough. My legs aren't that strong.
I used to be in very good shape when I was dancing and I was doing ballet. I still couldn't have, like, that's an insane amount of strength and like control, you know, but like I said, you have to have your skin on the pole so that it has friction. Actually, ironically, Travis Kelce also talks about this with,
did he get on one?
No, with football. So,
I was like trying to imagine a big football player on a,
you're like, Christy, where is this going? No. So one of, you know, him, his podcast that he has with Jason, they have that No Stupid Questions. And somebody had asked once why some football players, when it's freezing out and it's winter, don't wear sleeves. And he said that it's because your skin helps you hold on to the ball better. And the ball is more slippery if you have clothes on. It's the same thing. It's your skin is just more.
Well, I feel like he was trying to cause a sister to stumble.
I mean, Travis Kelce is constantly causing a sister to stumble.
Oh, right? Well, yeah. No, I meant the guy with the sword.
But oh, yes, the sword guy.
Indeed, so, he is. Indeed, he is.
Yeah. So the guy had to take his shirt off so that he could do this pole thing, which, again, all of this is an absolutely ridiculous thing to have part of a men's conference to begin with. But that aside, it wasn't like he was up there just being shirtless for shirtless's sake.
Also, it's a bunch of guys.
Also, who knows?
Well,
if you're happy about it.
I was going to say, but if you're a part of that group,
you can't be happy outwardly.
Well, no, but don't they think that, like, you get made gay and you're not born gay or something?
Yeah.
A lot of the conservative groups. Yeah, which we do not advocate.
No.
But in that case, I guess maybe he was
Anyway, all this to say, the whole...
I'm just trying to work out his logic here,
we got off on a tangent there, but, like, the whole concept of, like, men have to be a certain kind of... very like hunter. It's like they were the hunters, you know. We're like trying to return to Paleolithic times, and like men did the hunting.
There was a lot of penetration talk in the description.
Yeah,
like they are the penetrators and we are the penetrated. And I just, every time I saw the word penetrated, I felt uncomfortable deeply. Yeah,
unnecessary.
They're like, no, it's also like swords and knives and things. And I was like, sure, Jan.
So one time, so you were talking about how people would make you talk about things just because you were the woman in the room.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at my previous institution, they used to have a annual fashion show for the business majors, and the point of it was to be like, here's how you dress in offices, essentially. But what we found out, because they asked a couple of the faculty in my department to be the judges, and the faculty were both men, is that it's entirely about women, so that they didn't have any men in this fashion show. It was just like women would come up on stage in an outfit, and then the guys, my two friends, were supposed to say whether or not that was appropriate for the business setting.
I hate everything about the story.
So did they. So they were like, absolutely not. We are absolutely not going to do this. That is...
Oh, I'm so glad. I thought you were going to say
They said, this is an insanely inappropriate and uncomfortable situation for you to put us in, and we are not going to do that. And then the response from the people who were putting this on was to then say, well, if you won't do that, will you instead do a talk for our students on sexuality, human sexuality? And they were like... What? No, actually, I think that's what they said. We won't judge this fashion show, but we will. I think they were trying to call the bluff of the student life people. We will do a talk on human sexuality or something like that. Anyway, ended up happening. But then they were like, well, we're not going to do this. We're two men. So they came to me and they were like, you are the only female in this department.
Oh my gosh.
And who does theology? And so,
which in itself is a problem, just in general.
Also, I was like an adjunct at the time. So, like,
oh my gosh.
We had another woman, she did church history. So they were like, you're the only one who's doing like proper theology.
Oh my Lord.
And anyway. They said, will you do it with us? And I was like, I guess so. And then they also asked one of the psychology professors.
Did you have to dress like you were going to be in business?
So the four of us. We did this it was after the workday. Was it like 5 o'clock or whatever? They had it in this really small room. It was completely packed. So many students came. And we decided that we weren't going to actually give a talk. We were just going to answer questions. And so the entire setup was just the students could ask questions and we would answer them. And it was actually really great. But like the only reason I was there was because I was the only woman.
Have you been the token what fill in the blank somewhere, guys? Let us know.
Have you ever?
We both know what it's like.
And like,
but I think there's a difference between like when we have certain people on our, because you could argue and say, oh, y'all have done that too. But I think there's wanting to have diverse voices or voices from certain communities speak about their community. And then also the difference between that and
like we just need
a token person.
Well, too, especially because I mean, I think the point of like having Columba on is like you and I are both like, we don't want to speak to the queer experience.
Absolutely.
And so like let's have somebody do that. Whereas like
they just wanted you there
because they were like, we're afraid. Right. I will also again give them some credit though, because a lot of the questions became like, what is like one kid said, what do you think is the proper understanding of what it means to be like a man who is Christian versus a woman who is Christian? And I was like,
I don't even understand.
I don't know. That's what I said. I was like, I don't understand what kind of question that is. Like, what are you asking? And he was like, well, I just
like, think, what role should you
have? He was like, I just think that women shouldn't have leadership roles because they're gender roles that are lined up by God. And I was like, I don't agree with you at all. And I think that also you're making this a really broad statement and not even specifically saying it's about like who's the head pastor at a church. You're talking like every woman has to submit to every man, uh-huh. You know? And he was like, well, yeah, because the men are the leaders. And I was like, nowhere in the Bible does it say that. No Christian, no serious Christian theologian is going to argue that.
Well, one argument they used in the text I was reading was there is the verse about women submitting to their husbands or whatever.
But even that is like a specific.
No, it is women to its husbands and wives. Yeah.
Like it's like.
And when I'm not like even devil's advocating. No. I'm just saying that's a verse that was those weird 90s people kept bringing up. Essentially.
But this kid was just like, all women are submissive. Oh wait.
Right, exactly.
And I'm
like, and I see this submission to the in that like I see that as more of like a you're co-creating, but that's my version.
Oh, same. Well, and also too, I think that it's interesting, and when I say interesting, I mean ridiculous that they never ever then reference the second part of that, which is like husbands essentially should sacrifice themselves for their wives.
Right. Like, right. So it's a equal. Yeah.
You're not balance. Following yeah. through with the rest of the context there. You're
well, just... gosh, Christy, we don't want to talk about the history because women just shouldn't talk in church.
Women just
we
should.
We don't care that people are complaining about gossiping and that's actually
what was going on.
But who cares? It's just they don't talk ever again.
Never speak.
One dude told us.
One time, a guy was mad Sorry. That some women were gossiping, and now Sorry. No women should ever speak ever again.
Ever talk in church again. Because you know what? We like to do things in moderation. But let's not look at this.
Yeah.
Sorry to all you high church people. I just said some guy that wasn't Jesus said it.
Some guy.
And it was Paul. It was Paul. It's very important. Okay.
Look.
Yes.
Context.
But context does matter.
Context matters. And like there are plenty of, I think, you know, you were saying that you had read some books like Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood.
They were in that chapter. Oh yeah, because that was John Piper.
That was Piper.
And I didn't realize how like I knew he did not share my beliefs on those things, but I didn't realize he was a part of that whole like. And I want to give some context because like, it so there was I'm not going to tell you like the whole book. You really should read it though, I think, because it gives you the context of like the 50s and how a lot of this stuff started with integration and this feeling of like a loss of traditional roles in all of the senses, like not just like. white maleness became like a problem, and people seemed a problem in the sense of like, they felt, a group of them anyway, felt as though they were not able to be defended by anything. And you see that in the white nationalists now. It's just like, well, what about white? Why can't I say white power? Women can say women power and all this sort of stuff. So there was that whole thing. And then as it progressed, this is very grossly summarizing, into like the 60s, where all these movements were taking place, it was worse and worse, especially in the South. And especially in Colorado.
It was real bad. Yeah, no.
And then
it was really bad.
By the time you get to like the 80s and the 90s, there's this like real pushback against these sort of equality movements and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you start to get men kind of coming out and saying, you know, writing these books, predominantly white men, although there were some African-American men that were in there too, but they were basically talking about, we need to basically go back. You know, it's always that same thing, you know, make America whatever
again. Oh, yeah.
And what they're really saying is, let's take it back to when there is a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And
well, let's take it back to when we have all the power. Like, we're losing power and we are uncomfortable with the loss of power. What is the saying? Like, the loss of power is understood as oppression, you know? And that's actually not what's going on. It's not oppression. It's just that you're like, things are equalizing, but you feel like it is because you're the one losing the power. Wait.
And Hochschild talks about in The Strangers in Their Own Land that she always references, she's the one that went to Louisiana to study the Tea Party. She's from Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And she said they're overwhelming. There's a great paradox and then the deep story. And the great paradox for these groups, predominantly white evangelical working class people, the paradox is that they perpetually vote for things that do not benefit them.
Mm-hmm.
And she argues that they're doing that because they're always looking up and they never look back.
Yeah.
Like in terms of money and success, so they want to be the 1%, but they know that, so they don't mind like people like Trump and all these people, yes, saying stuff because they want to attain that. And they don't look back to see the people below, mm-hmm, as being more like them than the 1%. And it's like,
yeah,
so they perpetually feel like they're in a line that people are breaking in front of them,
yeah,
to get to the American dream. So that could be women, people of color, you know, immigrants, refugees, blah, blah, blah. When in fact, they don't see that. And I would say in the case of white men, that they've been at the head of the line full time.
Yeah.
And we've been at the back of the line or middle of the line, you know, as white people, middle of the line or, you know, whatever. You can make whatever metaphor you want. But that the reason it hurts so bad when these movements take place is because you are getting bumped down, but you don't realize that it's because you've been at the top for
so long. Yeah. Well, and it's like you're not even getting bumped down. It's just that people are coming up alongside you.
Yeah.
So you're not alone up there. And you're like, oh, no, you know. And I think this too is a lot of the discussion, because you mentioned like for us, and I think you and I, because we're in spaces that are so dominantly male, like we feel very acutely aware of how all this goes on. But also at the same time, because we are white, a lot of white women will do the same thing of like, we're also still trying to get ahead. So we look at the white men and we're like, they're hurting us. But then when Black women are able to like come alongside us, we're like, no, there's no room for you. Cause we're right.
And I want to behave like the white men.
Yeah. Like we want what the white men have. So we're willing to leave those people behind. And that's something I think we as white women have to be like cognizant of and, mm-hmm, and be, mm-hmm, like, you know, whiteness is still really powerful in this. You know,
100%. You know, I worked in a theology department where I was the only female theologian,
mm-hmm,
and there were no people of color in Christian theology.
Yeah,
not a man, woman, whatever, non-binary. It doesn't matter. Like there was no one.
Yeah.
So you had one woman, and this is a extremely prestigious institution, and it's like, and things have changed now, but this was at the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's, if you look at these spaces, and all I could think of was, I became head of theology at one stage. Again, I'm not going to think it's because I'm token woman, but that's fine. but it was one of the things where I looked around and I found myself behaving.
Yeah.
Like the men.
It's really easy to get into that space and like think like, okay, especially because, again, I think because you and I are in this field and there's a contingent of people who are like, if you want to get ahead in this field, you need to behave like the white men and you need to think like the white men and you need to have white men confidence and all of that, you know? And it's really, really easy to fall into that and to think mm-hmm. like, yes, I need to basically step over people or only just be focused on my agenda, you know?
Right.
But I also think, and not that either of us have done this perfectly, but you and I have always said, and we've talked about it here too, that we want to be able to pull up others with us.
Yep.
And like change that. We don't want it to be like, act like the white men. I feel like
we're doing that. And we had supervisors, like, I think for our PhDs that were minority women in theology, both of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were other, it's not my story to tell, but there was other intersectional things with my supervisor that I could talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and I think we learned from them that it was, it was appropriate and good to encourage women in theology to, and women of color as well, like to people who just weren't the face you saw all the time.
Yeah.
To really do that. And I think I learned, I mean, also no one's doing what I'm doing, mm-hmm. not specifically. And even if they are, who, you know, I will say shout out to Kevin Garcia, who's a friend of the podcast and also a friend of Theology Beer Camp. Cause we came out with that book and he, in 100% honesty, he came out with it before me and it's Bad Theology Kills. And then I came out with Bad Theology. I hadn't even read it. But one of the most powerful things that I ever did was I went on his podcast mm-hmm. as soon as I found out we were at beer camp in Chapel Hill. And we just talked about it as shared space. It was never like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you have this book that has this title.
Yeah. Like you guys have never been in competition for that title.
We haven't. And we're not in competition now. It's a different, and it's, but I think it was just so empowering to sit with someone and who's from a different community than me in many different ways. And just be like, we're not fighting about this. Yeah. Like this is, and you can do this. Cause in academia, one of the things that you'll see is adopting some of this historically competitive white maleness, I would say, that you just don't have to do. And I'm in practical theology and it's not as intense there because there's, I think, more diversity, but Christy's in systematics and man, oh man.
It can be really intense. And like I was, and again, I want to emphasize that like the men who mentored me in my early career were really lovely and helpful and supportive and like
hashtag not all men.
Yeah. however, I also think that they instilled in me some problematic behavior because they were very insistent that I behave like them, you know? And there was a lot of me feeling like I had to tone down certain aspects of my femininity mm-hmm. in order to fit in and to be heard and all of that. Like you need to make sure you're loud and you're authoritative and you need to dress certain ways and whatnot.
Wear that black jacket, cover those boobs.
Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't see any good models of doing theology as a woman and displaying feminine characteristics until I got into my PhD and was able to watch people like Heather Walton and Lynn Tonstad and Elaine Graham and other people who were like, we reject this kind of competitive and like, again, ego-driven, I guess, notion that that's how you're going to be part of theology.
Yeah.
You need to be able to be whoever, you know, you are, and to be able to be yourself authentically. Because yes, you need all of those voices, you know?
Yeah. And I think too, it's one of those things, who are you, you know, other than like, no, like I said, no one's doing exactly what anyone else is doing.
No, nobody. Like, even when I read Kevin's
book, I was like, we're talking in completely different languages.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely okay. Like, it's one of, so even if you find someone who wrote on like Jean Rhys, like, they're probably not going to have the same perspective as you.
Right. Well, and also, like, I mean, how much fun would it be to have somebody to talk about stuff?
Yeah.
In a non-competitive way, you know, like, I would love to meet another person who was like, Jean Rhys is helpful for theology.
Right. But that's not how historically it's been viewed, is that if you have someone, it was viewed as that basically, we can't, there's so few pieces that you have to take what you can get, mm-hmm. and take it by any means necessary.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, why don't we create new pieces and new places for us to talk? And like, it's part of why I really, you know, I put up a thing that said I'm skipping out on the American Academy of Religion to go to Beer Camp and to go to my regional meeting, because I, you know, sometimes when I go to the big AAR, it feels just like we're all snatching at like two pieces, and mm-hmm. not always. But sometimes, and it's like, I just need a little break.
Yeah.
From performing.
Well, and I think too, to be able to say like, you know, I mean, you and I both have to prioritize where we're spending our money, because we're not getting funding for some of that stuff.
That's right.
So like, you know, we can't do everything. And this is part of what we talked about when we talked about whether or not we were going to go to Beer Camp this year. And we realized that that was a better use of our time.
Yep. 100%.
That we felt like it was more in line with our goals and our values for our theology to go to a place that's not just for academics.
And I think that's right. Yeah.
As much as we love AAR, and as much as we love all the people, and we're, you know,
I was ready for my redemption tour, Scottish redemption tour.
We're always sad to miss out on it. We also realize that like, it is a place for a specific purpose, and sometimes that purpose is great, but sometimes you have to say like, hey, we only have so much of ourselves to give, and this is where we want to give it. And this year it was, we want to make sure we're giving it to Beer Camp instead of AAR. So, and I think that's just part of like, yeah, like how we understand both like the things that those kind of patriarchal principles tried, and that we both rejected, you know, to say like, we're not going to just be in it to become the top of our game, or the like famous people or something. Like, we're doing,
what if we do get famous though, Christy?
If we do get famous, we're going to delete this podcast.
We are absolutely not going to. I'm going to archive it forever. It's on my phone.
I'm kidding. We'll be like, yes, absolutely. No, we're going to get famous. Here's what, because my dear friends recently all have received their copies of my book, which was very sweet. And in our group chat.
I mean, that's such a dick. Not that it's an appropriate wordage for this podcast. I made a vagina head mood. Because all her friends were like, we're so proud of her. Oh my God. Yay. And I was like, I mean, it's okay.
It was so funny.
I was like, she's getting kind of a big head.
She's getting a big head about this, guys. No, it was very sweet because they were being really nice about like, hey, we're receiving our books and whatnot. And one of my friends was like, when's it coming out on audiobook? And I said, when I can get Dolly Parton to read it for me.
Oh my gosh.
And we were joking about like how I could get Dolly Parton to read my book. And I was like, firstly, can you imagine?
No. On any level, I just would want her to read my title and I'd be happy enough.
She could just read the table of contents and I would be like, that's my life goal there, right there.
Also, your audiobook would be like five seconds long. I'd just be like, well, hey, y'all. Hey. I'm going to read some table of contents here real quick for you now. And then it'd be gone.
It'd be gone. You could advertise it as a way to fall asleep. Like, I just can't imagine trying to read that or to listen to that. Like, her voice is too soothing and the material is too academic for an audiobook. Okay.
As someone who's from Georgia, yeah, I did do a good impression there.
You did.
How much would you pay me to pretend to be Dolly Parton?
I would pay you
$5.
$100. $100.
I countered your $100 with the
$5. My offer is now down to $10.
A fruity drink when I come to Florida, mm-hmm. Which probably will be $10. But yes. Yeah. That would be amazing. Yeah. I have a Kindle. My book's on Kindle, but I don't have any electronic book.
Mine is also on Kindle.
I don't have an audio book.
I also recently, and I sent this to you, Leah, but just for our listeners out there, there's a like TikTok kind of micro trend of people with Southern accents doing Shakespeare.
Oh my God.
And I saw this one and this boy, I mean, he has got to be like 21 years old and I just melted. He was doing like Romeo and Juliet and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever experienced in my life.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
I was like, yeah, this is how Shakespeare should be done from now on. Is this
accent. I mean, we most of the time get voted as the sexiest accent. Sorry, Yankee bots.
I also have heard numerous times that it's closer to like what an English accent would have been back then than what English accents are now. So
I always fancy myself having a real strong English accent.
So. Uh-huh. How does your Scottish husband feel about that?
He would not be happy at all. Although he is, I'm telling you, Christy, the man, I can't wait till he gets back to Scotland this summer.
I was going to say, he's going to get it back.
He's going to get it back and he's also going to get railed because he sounds like he's from the bayou or something. Like, he's going to get, I mean, it is crazy.
Is it going to be like the Glasgow uni accent where everybody just endlessly mocks it?
I mean, it's not even posh, it's some weird Cajun Scottish hybrid. I don't know, it's like weirder than, it's not even how I talk. Like,
he talks, you gotta listen to like some Frankie Boyle every day. Just I was to gonna keep say
get Kevin Bridges on the line or whatever.
Keep Kevin so Bridges on.
But yeah, he sounds, it's wacky. And
that's hilarious.
And it gets worse in the circles that sometimes what we are in, especially if I'm drinking, because when I'm drinking as those of you at the Scottish Reception will know, it gets a lot worse.
Those who come to beer, hey, come to Theology Beer Camp, you'll get to hear Leah's Southern accent.
Southern accent.
We might take you to the Scandalite if you haven't been to the Scandalite.
Oh my God, I keep forgetting that we're going to Denver.
To Denver.
Look, Christy will not take you to Centennial Park.
I won't take you to Centennial Park.
I will also not. And if you start reading in Centennial Park, I'm going to make fun of you.
I'm next time AAR is in Atlanta, I'm purposely taking a book to Centennial Park just to make your head explode.
I can't wait. It'll be so fun. As soon as I heard that line, I was like, "Invisible, I used to read in Centennial." I immediately stopped and was like, I was like, "No, you didn't.
No, you did not."
Also, why are you in Atlanta, Taylor? Why are you there? Like, in the weird tourist bit downtown? What are you doing? Who are you with?
Oh my gosh! No, this is my official. I'm officially saying it. If you come to Theology Beer Camp, I will take you to, it's called the Candlelight, but we don't call it that. We call it the Scandalite. And do you remember what happened to us there, Leah?
Yeah, we went with Myron, who is a fellow academic. I didn't think he was going to come, but we had just met Myron.
Shout out to Myron, who is down for anything.
DT anything. But yeah, no, that sounded way sexier.
It did.
Myron is just a dear friend, guys. But anyway, he's a dear friend.
Yeah.
He is. He's from Canada, and
he's the nicest human.
I mean, he's really bumping up that stereotype, and yeah, he does philosophy. But anyway, we just met him we were like, we're going to this weird ass bar. Do you want to come? And he was like, yeah. And then he came, and it was real strange. Like, and yes, I do remember we went into this bar, which is a dive bar.
It's a dive bar. It's the best.
But like
effing place in the world.
This guy at the counter. Our badges, which we had badges on for, it was AR.
And you forget, they just become part of you. So yeah, you just wear them around and then you're the nerdiest human ever. But
we were movie makers. He wouldn't let it go. He said, oh, and then when Myron came in, he was like, oh, you make movies too. And Myron looked at us like, what?
We were like, we don't know. And this then man...
he showed us a YouTube video, remember, of mm-hmm. his friend who made movies.
Yep.
And guys, speaking of male ego, we told him so many times that, in fact, we didn't make movies. And we showed him, it said, the American Academy of Religion, but yep, he didn't care.
He never cared.
And then he got into a fight with a guy that looked like Jesus, who was a Trump supporter. And he started screaming in the bar that he supported Trump, which doesn't hit in Denver the same way that it would hit.
Does not hit at all in Denver.
No, not at all. But also,
deep blue.
It is deep blue. But I think weirdly, I felt more sympathy for the Trump supporter because of how insane the guy was.
Well, the man was insane, and like he was insistent. Definitely believed that Myron was the director. By the way,
oh, yeah. Which was again sexist.
Again, he was like, "Here, your director has showed up," and we were like, "We are not filmmakers." And Myron said to him so many times, and Myron was trying to be so nice. And at one point, I remember he looked at me and said, "Where did you take me?"
That's right.
And I just laughed. I was like, "I told you that we call it the Scandalite for a reason."
Yeah. And so we'll take you guys.
We'll take you to the Scandalite.
Hopefully that guy's not there. And yeah, I felt bad because I will say the guy that, like, other than having interesting political choices, like the guy that looked like Jesus, who was a Trump supporter, he didn't really say anything.
He just kind of sat there.
He just sat there. Like,
I mean, he's probably used to it. He probably gets yelled at a lot, but like.
But also, the man talked so much that he couldn't have said anything to it. It escalated so quickly. Actually, the picture that's pinned on our Instagram is us at the.
Yes, it is. That's us.
And I made Christy bleach my teeth out and edit because I had red wine.
We had had a lot of wine. And I had to present a paper at 8 a.m. the next morning.
Which I came to, by the way.
You did. You did.
I was not enjoying my life, but
Neither was I.
I was enjoying her paper.
So. It was a rough go, but we were there.
If we go to Atlanta, my version of, and you guys can Google this, I would do it on your home computer, though, or maybe your phone and not your work computer, is the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta, which is not Centennial Park, but that's where I'm taking you. There's a very special lady there, and I want you to meet her. So.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
And then you can go read in the park if you
want. And then I literally all I need now is a picture of me reading in Centennial Park.
We're gonna do it. We're gonna take a picture next time.
When is it? You know the schedule. It's San Diego this year.
There's no schedule that's coming anywhere close to us anytime soon.
Lordy.
I can't say. Yeah, but there might be a restart of where we are going, but I don't know that for sure. Like, in terms of, I can't even say that.
I was going to say, don't say anything you're not supposed to
say.
She can't publicly announce them, so it's fine.
That's true. I can't. But what we do know is what's on the website.
Yeah.
Is that there are, I think for the next, like, it's
San Diego, Boston. That's all I know. That's where my knowledge ends.
I think that's where everyone's knowledge ends.
Oh, okay. So it's just the next 2 years. Interesting. I haven't been to Boston in a hot minute, so that'll be fun.
I've only been once, and it was so cold I wanted to sink into a hole in the ground.
The only other time I've been to Boston was in the summer, so I've never, and I purposely avoided it in the winter months.
Christy, you told me to wear, It was so funny because I've lived in Scotland for 11 years. And Chris, I was going to Denver, and she was like, be sure to wear warm clothes. I was like, girl, I got you. I'm on it. I am a Southern girl, but I got you. Boston it's a whole other thing.
Here's the thing, though. It's like being from Colorado makes me actually really, really bad at winter states because Colorado
was snowy, but it wasn't like
it wasn't bitter. Cold. It wasn't bitter cold. So like I can handle snow for a day or two, but like the sun comes out and it's warm and you don't have to worry, you know, like the actual like bone coldness.
It's bone coldness.
I can't do it.
And you're on the water. So it's like that wind.
I'm very bad at that. So this is where you're going to see Christy be a complete disaster because it's freezing and I'm going to be mad.
Me too. I'm mad already. And
we're preemptively mad for 2020.
I'm so glad we're choosing to skip the Southern California one and go to the Boston.
I mean, I'm still tiny bit up in the air just because of,
that's fair.
Of certain things, but
I will say I'm also up in, I'm not a firm no, but I'm leaning no.
Yeah.
Like
there's a couple of significant things that could mean I will go.
Mm-hmm.
But
was your book going to be out on display?
It will be, which is difficult to miss, honestly.
That's correct. Yeah.
Cause like going to see it.
You saw me. That was my first time saying it. I was so delighted.
So that'll be sad, but I'll have it at beer camp. It's fine.
I held it, and at one stage I was walking kind of with it, and the guy was like, are you going to buy that? And I was like, no, I wrote that. And he didn't even care at all.
He was just like, can you put it down then?
He was basically like, well, just don't steal it. It's my own book. How can I steal my own book?
Like, I already have a copy.
It's not your book anymore, beesh. Sorry.
You don't own that anymore. You don't.
All right. Well, girl, we're at 76. I think we hit it.
I think and we started rambling real good. So
we did. So guys, tell us about your, I didn't even hit Promise Keepers, which was another thing.
God,
I was
we didn't
about.
Even get to that. Everybody, tell us your thoughts on Taylor Swift's album. Tell us your thoughts on the patriarchy. And
tell us your thoughts about the patriarchy in the 90s, which I think was our focus.
And then
did you read Wild at Heart?
Read Wild at Heart?
Did you see a pole dancer at your conference? If so, how did you feel about it?
Have you pole danced? And what is your experience? And then thirdly, the third thing is to make sure you sign up for Theology Beer Camp and to use our code, which is ROCKS Aragorn, ROCKSARAGORN.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get $25 off.
And if you do that, I will, when I see you, I will take a phone book and I'll rip it in half using the power of the Lord. I promise.
Please. I want to see this.
Like, we're already doing the hot wings.
Okay? You're already doing the hot wings challenge again. It'll be different this time though. So excitement.
All right.
All right. Bye, y'all.